Truth works. Find it, speak it, live it. Episode 20.
At what point did we become rigid, immovable? I have experienced anxiety. I've been tearful and anxious about everything and nothing. My incessant ruminating state of mind has had a huge impact on my physical and mental health and on my business. The funny thing is, I've noticed this change by living more mindfully. I see its impermanence, which has enabled me to take back my power. By helping thousands of CEOs to find, speak, and live their true purpose, their true life's purpose, I've noticed a commonality amongst them. They believe that once they've done, or once they've found the essence of who they are, that's it, it's done. They have a plan for everything. And in part, this is true. They have vision and a plan for themselves in every aspect of their life. But they have a permanency of mind too, a fixation on that specific plan. However, I've come to see for myself and those I help that the only permanence is impermanence. Recently, a client of mine, who happens to be a CEO of a multi-million pound global manufacturing business, told me that there's no place for hope in business. Business needs stability, and leadership is all about facilitating that. Actually, in the last 3 years, all we've heard are statements like, what business needs, what this country needs, is stability. In fact, wasn't there a campaign focused entirely on strong and stable leadership? This incessant desire to maintain the status quo is driven by fear, by holding on to those old practices and attitudes. It produces anxiety, stress, poor performance, and an inflexibility that breeds disaster and, quite frankly, failure. What if we accepted the impermanence of life? Whilst visiting a school last month, I asked a class of teenagers if they could think of anything at all that was genuinely unchanging, anything truly permanent. I wasn't expecting to see any hands raised. To my surprise, one student put his hand up and told me there was something permanent, something truly unchanging, and that was impermanence itself. I was blown away. There's a wisdom that understands the law of impermanence, and it is this wisdom which will protect us from undue suffering. Why don't more adults understand this? At what point do we become rigid, immovable? Change is nothing new. However, what is new, thanks to technology, is the pace of change. Never before have we had such ease of access to information about the changing nature of things. Naturally, we feel grateful for many advantages that technology has provided, such as possibilities for better healthcare, improved education, and safer societies. However, this rapid rate of change is undeniably contributing to significant increases in the level of anxiety. Many of the structures in society which previously provide a relative sense of security now seem less reliable. Business has changed. Life is constantly in flux. But as I ask you to contemplate uncertainty, I don't want you to assume that change itself is necessarily a problem. We all live in hope. People living in utilitarian dictatorships live in hope that someday soon things will change. If we are suffering from illness, we hope that the symptoms will soon change when we recover. Sadly, though, while the technology itself is neutral, it does have the effect of amplifying whatever it touches. This in turn leads to intensification, and regarding the rate of change, is contributing to people feeling pushed beyond what they can tolerate. I felt it. For myself. We all know this accelerating rate of change is not going to cease anytime soon. For many of us, unfortunately, this uncertainty leads to becoming habitually pessimistic. I did. I have. I've noticed firsthand recently I was suffering physically and emotionally from anxiety. Things were changing in my personal and professional life. I noticed how fixated I was about holding on to a particular mindset. I still do at times, but this will change too. And behaviors from the past. I had set objectives for my business and I wasn't achieving them. But external factors in my business had changed. I was seeing reality as a boulder on a beach, unchangeable, intimidating by my unwillingness to acknowledge that the boulder of anxiety erodes and changes over time, like everything. I allowed myself to be defined by feelings of pessimism. It became an obligation. It was a choice, even when it didn't feel that way. The most skillful way of dealing with feelings of fear is that of what I call strategic optimism. When people ask me how I personally deal with challenging dilemmas, I often tell them that I'm a strategic optimist. Of course, naive optimism is very dangerous, as is habitual pessimism. Both these perspectives blind us to a great many possibilities. When our decision to intentionally develop an optimistic attitude is informed by mindfulness, sense, restraint, and skillful reflection, it is neither naive nor dangerous. We can choose to adopt such an approach out of our desire to take full responsibility for our actions of body, speech, and mind, so as to do more than merely react out of conditioned preference. If we are honest with ourselves, we have to admit that we don't know that everything is getting worse, any more than we know that everything's getting better. But what we can observe is how being caught in a negative mindset affects the very things that unfold, and conversely, how cultivating wholesome mindsets can have a positive influence on our decision-making. It isn't rocket science to see that being positively disposed towards the results of our efforts brings beneficial results. I realize that, to some, speaking this way will sound idealistic, but I'm not talking about how things should be, but about how things are. How are we relating to reality moment to moment? How are we interested? In what way are we interested in what works? What helps? Or are we merely caught in negative thinking and worrying about what could happen in the future? I have been. Thinking is something most of us all are quite good at. We tend to do a lot of it. Not thinking, on the other hand, is probably something we are not so good at, and which would benefit from more attention. What? Not thinking in business? If talking about paying attention to not thinking sounds contradictory, that is because so much of the time our attention is tethered to the activity of thinking. We are built that way. Way back from school days, in those first throes of independence, those teenagers last month are measured by how effectively they think. It doesn't have to be that way. Using various meditation techniques, we can discipline attention to untether attention from thinking. Then we are able to pay attention in a more feeling way, almost like a feeling investigation. I get the CEOs I work with to pay more attention by noticing their breathing. The result? Better choices in the moment. They are better able to drive feelings through their talk or presentation that they might be doing. When we develop the ability to investigate without the persistent interruption of mental verbiage, we have access to a different quality of discernment, where discriminative intelligence and intuition can work collectively and creatively together as partners. We let go of our fixation. We adapt our plans for living our true purpose. We rewire our unhelpful conditioning and become who we want to be. We untangle our confusion and we move away from this anxiety and move towards success, our true purpose. So next time you enter into a conversation or meeting, see if you can pay attention. Notice your breathing. By doing so, you will create space between the stimulus and your responses. Notice the impact this has on whether you responded in the ways that you always do or you choose an alternative. And finally, if you'd like to discover your true purpose and live more as the real you, then join us at TruthWorks.
TruthWorks can be found at truth-works.co.uk.